It's here, a Canucks game day, and it is Canucks Central. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. So we're live here on Sportsnet 650. We're going to get into some Canucks topics and revisit the 2017 draft with Sam Cosentino for the podcast version of today's show. You'll also hear the pregame coming up over the next hour. And then, of course, the postgame show with myself and Sat will be podcasted on this feed as well. Subscribe, leave a review. We do appreciate it very much. Sat, the Canucks are back to action, and we're looking at this, and we're looking at the runway left in the season, and the Canucks need a lot of things to break their way to make it to the playoffs, of course. But one thing we want to explore is who's going to lead the way for the remainder of the season for the Vancouver Canucks, especially from a production standpoint.
I want it to be Elias Pettersson. That's what I want it to be. And when I put the question out on social media and people started chiming in about it, the consensus was JT Miller. Who else, right? Because he's been the guy leading the team. But somebody did mention and replied and said, I really want it to be Elias Pettersson. So I'm going to say Elias Pettersson because that's what this team needs. And that's essentially where I'm at. I really want it to be Elias Pettersson. And like you mentioned, if this team is actually going to make the postseason, not that it has to be Elias Pettersson, but that road becomes far more manageable if it is Elias Pettersson.
That's definitely the most optimistic take I've ever heard you have. You're usually the logical one on this show.
Well, here's what I said. I said I wanted to be Elias Pettersson. They needed to be Elias Pettersson.
Okay.
I'm not sure it is going to be Elias Pettersson. And that's the rub here, right?
Yeah.
Therein lies the rub for the Canucks. We desperately want it to be Elias Pettersson, but have we seen enough yet to believe that it's going to be him?
Well, it's tough to imagine that that's going to happen. You know, we have 34 games that Pettersson has played, and what has he shown to let us believe he will be that guy? I mean, even right now, I think he's fifth among forwards in average time on ice for this team. So he's going to have to produce at a lot better rate than he currently has to lead this team in points. And sure, if he starts to get them, maybe his ice time creeps up and he becomes one of the top three, ice time leaders on this team for the remainder of the season. But you know, right now, it started with Travis Green and it's continued with Bruce Boudreau, where he's just not one of the guys that's really counted on by this Canucks team right now.
Well, and that's the thing. And we'll see ultimately what the power play looks like here tonight. Where does Elias Pettersson feature into it? And I know Boudreau's been doing everything he can to talk him up, right? And you saw the mic'd up video the Canucks posted on their Twitter feed, and it's on YouTube as well. You see how encouraging Bruce Boudreau is, right? And with Elias Pettersson, he said, hey, you were the hardest working guy at practice before you got sick. You keep doing that, the good things will come. And he gives him, you know, a pat with a stick and then gives him a pat on the back as well. So you see that Boudreau is trying to manifest it as far as how he's talking to and with Pettersson. But has he shown the belief in Pettersson yet by putting him in positions like, say, the first unit, no matter what, right? And playing him bigger minutes. He has to earn it too, but you're right. So far, the usage has shown him not to be the most important forward on the team because he hasn't played like the most important forward on the team yet.
Yeah, Besser's back in the lineup, and Besser was a fixture on power play one. When he went out into protocol, Pettersson took that spot, but we'll see how it all works out. In an ideal world, they're both on power play one, but the Canucks have had to be realistic about where Pettersson's game is at. And it is interesting how Boudreau, you know, he mentioned it in the video that the Canucks put out earlier today on Tuesday. And he said it to us on the show last week when he joined us that Pettersson's really working hard. He's putting in the work. He's staying extra at practice, doing all these things. If you do the hard work, good things will come. But at this point, you know, it is more of a hope than a reality that Pettersson will lead this team in points for the remainder of the season. You know, there's two forwards. I think the two most obvious players are JT Miller and and Quinn Hughes that could lead this team in points. And they're the most obvious answers right now, but let's say Brock Besser plays the full allotment of mm-hmm. games for the remainder of the season. Could he be in this conversation?
Of course he could be. And I think people kind of forget that Brock Besser, especially when you look at his last three seasons, not that he's been a point-per-game player, but last year he led the team in points with 49, right? And yeah, I know JT Miller had played three fewer games and he had 46 points, but Besser led this team in scoring last season. So what's to say that he can't lead the team in scoring, at least for the rest of the season? He absolutely can. And based on how he's played under Boudreaux and how Boudreaux wants to utilize him and how he fits into the system so well, he could definitely go on a heater. You know how you mentioned I'm the logical one? I'll apply some logic here as to why it will be Pettersson, actually, right?
Oh.
Look at it this way. Look at it this way, for instance. If you were not watching this Canucks team play this season, right? But you know who Elias Pettersson is. You've watched him play over the years. You understand the numbers and everything he's done. And you were asked to all of a sudden look at this roster, how it's performed. You see Elias Pettersson's had a dreadful season so far. If you're banking on one player to get hot in the second half, based on his track record and the fact he has been so underwhelming production-wise compared to what his career average and ability is he not the guy that really is the most likely to go on a heater, considering he hasn't regressed back to the mean yet, right? So if you base it on just the logical look at, okay, which player, based on how he's played, based on his career history, and if you're projecting things, you can actually make a pretty good argument. It actually will be Elias Pettersson. What makes us doubt it is his form we've seen so far this year, the body language, right? The failures he's had this year. That's what's preventing us from picking him to be the guy.
Yeah, it's Besser was not that, like, Besser was struggling, but he was also snake bit before Boudreaux came in and really gave him the push in those first couple of days that he was around, and the goals just started going in for Besser immediately. It worked out so well. It almost felt like a happy coincidence. But how many posts was Besser hitting that he just, it felt like Besser was getting closer and closer and closer, but things weren't falling for him. The question with Pettersson is, are you seeing that it's even close? Like, there's been games, Sat, but there's been a lot of moments where I'm like, I still don't know who this guy is at times. Now, I do feel like the more aggressive style has helped Pettersson. I think him seeing a little bit of the penalty kill has engaged his game a little bit more. And I think when you are engaged defensively, it can maybe work out that you start to do some more of the little things on offense that contribute to the one big thing, and that is goals on the ice. Mm-hmm. But I still don't see it consistently enough with Elias Pettersson to say that he's going to lead this team in scoring for the rest of the season.
Well, and as far as which player is going to produce the most on this road trip, I can't pick Pettersson because, again, the form isn't there. But if you're asking me to make a bet on the final 48 games of the season, I'm still betting on Pettersson. And perhaps maybe I'm throwing bad money after bad, right? And I'm making a mistake here. But again, at the same time, the argument is, if you believe in the talent still and you think that what he's going through is temporary, not really the player we're going to see for the rest of his career, then you're going to bank on it happening at some point here, right? And it's not, I still can't believe, Dan, we're going to get through this season with him being like half, scoring less than 40 points. I just don't see it. I just don't see it. Even though he struggled, and I know it looks like he's so far from being at his peak, and he is, but I just can't believe that this player is not going to crest 40 points this season. I just can't believe it. Not even 40. Like, yeah. I'd still be shocked if he's not in a 50-some point range, right? Because there is way more talent here. And if you want to talk about posts, how many posts has Pettersson hit? If you talk about a guy being close but just missing, he's hit a lot as well. The confidence isn't there. He's not playing at the same level Brock was before he got going, and I agree with you, right? But again, if I still have stock in this player, and I'm basing that on everything he's shown in his career up until this point, then why do I not look at him at least showing us something in the second half of the season? There's still 48 games to go.
Yeah. 41-point pace right now for Elias Pettersson. that's where he's at, and we'll see how it plays out for the rest of the season. Canucks needing to see more from Petey, but we'll see if all the work in practice shows out. Now, JT Miller or Quinn Hughes? So they are the most obvious answers here. Why will Quinn Hughes lead the team in production? If you were to make that argument, why would Quinn Hughes lead the team in points rest of season ahead of JT Miller, who's a forward and is obviously in more opportunistic positions to score the most points?
Because he's probably the player with the most to gain when this team gets rolling, especially when the power play gets going as well, right? He's putting up these points with this Canucks team not having done a really good job scoring a lot of goals this season. So logic would dictate if you can score a bit more at even strength because your system is pressuring a bit more, you're creating more transition chances, and a guy great at creating transition chances is Quinn Hughes, that'll put him in line to get more points. And if that power play really goes on a heater, and it's up to over 20% efficiency now, which puts it, you know, in the top 13 of the league, which is respectable, right? But if it gets even better, who has more to gain on it than the quarterback on the power play? So I think that's the best way to craft an argument for Quinn Hughes. And if you're putting money down on it, that's a good one to put it down on, because he has a lot to gain here if this team gets hot as far as goal scoring goes.
I wonder, with Quinn, where his goal scoring could end up at. Is there more goals in his game than we have seen? We're seeing, Makar put up a ton of goals. Josi scores a bunch. You know, those guys do score at a higher rate than Quinn Hughes, who has been such a playmaking savant in his early days of his NHL career and continues to be that. But is there more goals in Quinn's game?
I see, the goals part is hard to predict with Quinn. I think the ability is there, but he's also not a player that at the NHL level yet has shown he can score, say, 15 goals in a season. I think when a defenseman can show he can score about 15 goals or so, then we can start baking in, okay, this is a guy that's going to get plus 10 every year. And maybe one year he gets up to close to 20. And I know he got 8 in 68 games in his rookie season, but he hasn't really shown a lot of goal scoring prowess quite yet. So I don't know if we can project him to be a goal scorer the way Cale Makar is, but there's definitely more ability there for him to gain. I'm just not projecting, say, goals to be a big part of his production the rest of the season.
Like, Quinn has this aggressive style, this more up-tempo style, to borrow from that video again, the quick ups. You know, Quinn has the ability and, is a player that can play with that much pace, obviously. And I think that's one thing that's going to continue to help him. But the biggest thing for Quinn, why, his production may really start to see an uptick, and it already has in the Boudreaux era, is just it's higher event hockey than it was before Boudreaux showed up. Whether it's gaining more chances at the offensive end versus giving up a few more on the defensive end. Like, the Canucks, just out of Bruce Boudreaux's philosophy, are going to play a higher event type of game, and that's going to benefit Quinn Hughes's production.
Well, it will be, right? And not only Quinn, I also look at it from Oliver Ekman-Larsson's perspective as well, right? Any one of these defensemen on the back end that can move the puck, Tyler Myers too, they can all benefit from the way Boudreaux has these guys playing. But I think the other question here is, how much are your forwards finishing too? I think that's a big question here. And the rest of the season, if this team is creating more chances than they're giving up, and they continue this trend they've been under with Boudreaux, they should be able to outscore their opponents. But if they don't, I think it's essentially going to come down to how their forwards finish. Because by the end of this season, or at least during Boudreaux's tenure, I don't think the issue is going to be a lack of chances for your guys to finish. So again, it kind of comes back to Elias Pettersson. I think for any one of these guys to really get on a heater on the back end, you almost need Pettersson and Besser to get going. Because those two guys are the guys with the highest ceiling goal scoring wise. And so far, Pettersson's not even on pace to get you 20. Let alone a guy that's going to, push, say, 30-goal pace at any point in the season. But if he gets on a heater goal-scoring-wise, that's what gets gets everything else kind of figured out. And the other thing that needs to happen as far as the production going, again, it comes back to Pettersson, because if he comes back to being the focal point of your team offensively, then it opens things up for other guys in your team too. Because right now, as much as teams are trying to take Pettersson away, you don't have to work too hard to take Pettersson away. JT Miller's becoming that focus, right? Bo Horvat gets that focus at times. So when Pettersson gets going too, I think it opens up things for the other lines as well for the team, and that should also allow the defensemen, like Quinn Hughes, to be in line to score more points.
So there is an argument to be made for a lot of players here. But JT Miller is probably the sensible choice. He is scoring at quite the rate so far this year. 3 points per 60 in all situations. That leads the team. He also has, I believe, the high mark in average time on ice for any forward on this team at over 21 minutes. So this is the guy that Boudreau has immediately identified as my horse up front. Like, this is the guy I can lean on in every situation of the game. He's our leader off the ice. He's a leader on the ice. He sets that example. JT Miller has brought it all for the Vancouver Canucks, and his game has not wavered from game one to, you know, game 34 as we sit here in mid-January. He's been the most consistent and the best forward on this team by a country mile, and I would expect that to continue for the rest of the season.
As far as usage is concerned, yes, right? And he's been so consistent. Now this is his third year. He's essentially a point-per-game player, right? And he could even go a bit higher the rest of the season. Like, he's the odds-on favorite. You're putting out odds on this. If we were to ask PlayNow Sports to give us odds on the final 48 games of the season, he'd be the favorite easily. And then number two would be Quinn Hughes, and number three would probably be Brock Besser, right? And then a number four probably would be Elias Pettersson. That's how far Pettersson would have fallen down as far as the projections go the rest of the season. But one guy we also haven't mentioned here is Connor Garland. And he was really going earlier this season, right? And yeah, early on, it was him. He was the guy that was creating. He was on a tear to begin that road trip and everything. He hasn't quite yet figured it out with this team. And he's been really good with this team already. He's been honest about that. He was on the People's Show with Bick and Randeep, and he mentioned that he's still trying to figure it out and how good the communication has been with Boudreau to really figure out what he needs to do. And I know Tyson Nash said, hey, it's not overly complicated. Go out there and do what you need to do. But I do believe he's making an effort to fit into how this team plays moving forward. And when you're a skill guy trying to figure out who your best line mates are and what the best duo is, it comes back to Pettersson again. But if Pettersson even gets going, even if he doesn't lead the team in scoring the rest of the season, but he gets going, that all of a sudden allows other guys to be far more productive. And if you add a little help to Connor Garland, what is he capable of the rest of the season?
So Garland is... He's the underdog in this race, you know? He's like, he's the guy that's kind of lingering in the background that nobody really wants to point at. He kind of, he gets lost because he's tiny. I know the feeling. But it's, Connor Garland has been one of the better 5-on-5 scorers in the league. He paces the Canucks in terms of rates with how he scores, and even just the raw counts of how he scores at 5-on-5 overall, just raw points. And I believe at last check it was top 20 in the league. He may have fallen out over the last few games, few days with the Canucks idle, of course, but the point remains. He has been one of the better 5-on-5 scorers in the league so far this year, and that's a trend that goes back to his Arizona days. He hasn't been a regular fixture on power play one. He only averages about 16 and a half minutes a night. If you were to give Connor Garland more ice time, would you see the production grow with it? Or is he just one of those players that works perfectly in that 16 to 18 type minute role?
No, man, play him more.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you play him more?
He's
so capable of doing more. Like, I want to see him. I know Besser is really good in the bumper spot, and I like him in that position. I mean, I'd love to see a power play where you have Besser and Garland playing together with Elias Pettersson, right? Like, I'd love to see that combination. And absolutely, I believe Connor Garland can produce more if he plays more minutes and plays an even more elevated role with this team. he's capable of it. Like, his skill level is extraordinary. His effort level is next level. And he's not afraid. He mixes it up. He gets the opponents off their game just because he works so hard and he's so annoying to go up against because he's always in your face and he's never giving up. And he gets blown up. He gets up and he goes right back at it again. He doesn't care, right? Those guys are capable of doing more if they get more minutes. The question, though, comes down to, what does a coach see in him? And I'm not trying to do the, hey, Boudreaux doesn't like him. But Boudreaux, and I thought it was interesting that he says, oh, I like him a lot, but he's a little guy. And if he was 6'2", he'd be amazing. So I wonder if Boudreaux sees some limitations in him based on his usage. And he views him the way you mentioned, that, hey, he's really good in that secondary role. And let him go out there and do that. I'm not sure we can get as much out of him in a different role. I wonder if Boudreaux views him that way. And I'm not saying he doesn't like him. He's been very complimentary of him. But I did find those two comments to be interesting, that he's a little guy, right? And if he was 6'2", and just certain things about how he's been used so far, even under Travis Green as well. So I do wonder if he's ultimately going to get the amount of minutes I like him to see here. But that's not to say he can't still be a really good, effective player for you who's worth every single penny. It may still be an under... might still be underpaid, so to speak, if he's putting up close to 60 points, which he's on pace for this season.
I do love what Garland brings from a hockey IQ standpoint. His playmaking ability, I thought, was underrated, even coming into Vancouver, and we've noticed it time and time again. His ability to shift away from checkers. Sometimes, though, you know, he gets hit pretty hard, and we kind of joke about it and laugh. You know, once or twice a game, he's going to take a pretty heavy hit. He'll bounce back up again, but you know, he does take quite the beating out there just by the sheer nature of his playing style, Connor Garland.
Well, he does, right? And those things could be a bit of an issue, but he's also shown to be a very durable player as well, too, right? I mean, last season he missed a few games, but it was a 56-game season. He played 49. The previous year, he played every single game, essentially, before the shutdown happened, and he's played every game so far here for the Canucks, right? Like, you can't worry about guys getting hurt too much, right? Like, I understand if you're talking about, say, putting a skilled guy on the PK, so to speak, who's not a depth forward, yada yada. I can understand that argument, but I don't buy into the argument of, hey, you can't play this guy too much because I'm worried he's going to get hurt because he's too small. I mean, I know people hate the comparison, but Brad Marchand's not one of the bigger guys in the league. He could play 20 minutes a game and be a monster, right? So I don't quite worry about that with him. To me, the biggest question for Garland is how much usage is he going to get and see from NHL coaches, right? And I wonder what he has to show in order to get the confidence or get the opportunity from coaches to play an even higher elevated, be viewed as a front-line player. Because for the most part, under Travis, now under Boudreaux, he's seen as a secondary player to the top-end guys here.
It's Canuck Central. You're listening live on Sportsnet 650 and on the Sportsnet app. You're also listening on podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Subscribe, leave a review, leave a comment with your review, and we'll potentially read it on the show as well. Mailbag Fridays happen every Friday, so drop us a note at @DanRicho_ and at @SatTRShaw with a question for us, and we'll answer it every Friday on the podcast and the live show in hour number 3. Coming up, Sam Cosentino is going to revisit the 2017 draft with us after Bobby Clark went on the Cam and Strick podcast and basically, well, he went after his ex-GM, Ron Hextall, in Philadelphia, saying he was the only guy who wanted Nolan Patrick. We'll revisit what the draft hype was around that time with Sam Cosentino. That's next on Canuck Central. Welcome back to Canuck Central. Dan Riccio and Sat-TR Shaw, as you know. The 2017 draft, Sat, back in the news.
Gotta love Bobby Clark.
It's very rare we get a moment like this, so I don't know. Let's bring in our listeners. Well, go ahead, Seth.
One thing I will say, and one of my favorite comments ever made about Bobby Clark was actually made about Dave Nonis, former Vancouver Canucks general manager, because back in the day, the Flyers signed Ryan Kesler to an offer sheet, right?
Right, right.
And the Canucks ended up matching it, right? And if they didn't, they would have been receiving a second-round pick. And at the time, a lot of fans were like, Kesler sucks, let him go, take the second, you'll never get more value for him. Imagine. Now, yeah. They ended up matching the contract, and Dave Nonis, obviously not happy about it, said, Bobby Clark will kick his own grandmother down the stairs if it helped him win. So that's kind of Bobby Clark.
That's a little insight on Bobby Clark. So why are we talking about Bobby Clark? He was on the Cam and Strick podcast, and he went to town on Ron Hextall, who was the GM in Philadelphia, and put a lot of blame on the Flyers' current struggles on Ron Hextall, and used the 2017 draft where the Flyers had the number 2 pick and spent it on Nolan Patrick as part of his reasoning.
He alienated everybody right away. He shut his door. He locked the doors. He was the boss and nobody else was part of it. We end up drafting. We get the second pick in the draft and we end up drafting Nolan Patrick. None of our scouts wanted Nolan Patrick. I don't know where Patrick should have gone after his performances in Brown, and he's a pretty good player, but he certainly, they wanted Makar. Of course, he went next. Now he's a superstar, and Patrick hasn't played number, but Hextall made that choice himself.
So there is Bobby Clark, he just, it's rare you get to hear somebody, you know, just go to town on a previous management group like that. Of course, Clark's still with the Flyers organization.
Well, I find it interesting. I find it also definitely being an axe to grind. Like, why would you come out and say that unless you have an axe to grind? Considering all the things that happen in the National Hockey League, how many decisions people make and how many disagreements there are and how many wins you have in retrospect and also how many L's you have in retrospect if you look back at mistakes or decisions you would have made that you didn't make either. So the only reason Bobby Clark is saying this is to get a message across. He has an axe to grind, right? But I do find it interesting because if that indeed is the case, then that's a pretty massive mistake. And that was the biggest issue with Nolan Patrick. And listen, I still liked him in the draft year. Everybody did. There were questions about his ceiling because of how ready he was for the NHL already, right? And there was questions about how much more he has to grow. But he was really game ready. He was seen as one of the most game ready NHL prospects at the time. So perhaps that's the reason he was taken a bit higher than he should have. But at the time, don't forget, Cale Makar came up through the Alberta Junior Hockey League, and it took a while, really, for people to get on board with him being a top-end talent.
Yeah, and, you know, Makar, obviously now you would redraft, and you'd probably take Makar number one there in 2017. But it's hard to agree with Clark, just knowing that pretty much that whole year, Nolan Patrick was pegged as the number one pick. And then late on, Nico Hischier started to get some hype as the draft started to get closer. At least that's how I remember it, Sat. How do you remember how draft boards were shaping up that year?
So that year, the Canucks were super high on Elias Pettersson, higher than most teams were. There were a couple other teams that were in on him, and they wanted to kind of move up to get him, and they were hoping the Canucks wouldn't take him at number 5. But the census was, he might be there between 5 and 7, and if that's kind of where you want him, that's where you'll get him. I think the Canucks had Cale Makar number 1 on their board that year. And it would also really not surprise me if Pettersson was number 2 on their list. I think they had 2 players a bit higher than consensus. One was Makar, I think, at number 1, and I think they had Pettersson top 2 or top 3 on their rankings. And Cody Glass was right up there with them as well. I mean, the biggest debate the Canucks had at number 5, and there was a big internal conversation at the time, was between Elias Pettersson and Cody Glass. But in hindsight, the fact that had Cale Makar number 1 on their draft board, that does kind of show they may have been ahead of the game on the young defenseman.
Let's bring in our next guest. He is a Sportsnet analyst, prospect analyst. It's Sam Cosentino joining us here on Canucks Central. And I'm looking back at your 2017 mock draft, Sammy. You had the first 6 picks guessed correctly. So I don't know what Bobby Clark's talking about, but you knew the Flyers were going Nolan Patrick the whole time.
Yeah, I got lucky there, Reach. That's for sure. But you know what? sometimes you just got to trace the roots a little bit. And you think about where Hextall was from, Brandon, the connection, Patrick played in Brandon, you know. So a lot of the stuff that's coming out today, it's not completely surprising when you go back and you can consider the lineage. In hockey, it's funny. You can trace the lineage to a lot of different things. Friends hiring friends. Look what just happened in L.A. with Mark Bergevin. You know, coaches and people getting hired in different positions as scouts, assistant general managers, whatever the case might be. If you go back, you can usually find a line to the decision maker based on some of those hirings or some of those draft picks. And this is a perfect situation where you see that with Hextall drafting Patrick.
Well, and as far as why Patrick became the player he became or has failed to become the player they had hoped he'd become, how much of that is actually his lack of ceiling as a prospect or just all the injuries he's also faced so far?
You know, Nolan Patrick's a very interesting study because if I go back to his 16-year-old year, here's a guy that made a lot of noise and was well ahead of his game at that time. So you're talking about a late birthday guy. It's a guy you get to see the additional year of. A guy you can over-scout. Now, if I go back to that 2015-16 season and think about what was happening there, they go to the Memorial Cup. The next year they come back. He's injured on a bunch of different occasions before he's taken number two in the draft. And I know I talked to a lot of people who had concerns about recurring injury issues. Is it luck? Is it a player that doesn't want to go to the post unless he's 100%? Is it just a trend that happens with some players? All of those things are pretty hard to predict. But if you go back and you do your due diligence on the player and you look at what the various injuries were, you might have some cause for concern. Having said all that, there's also a separate discussion here, guys, when it comes to talking about the media and how people, prognosticators, guys who do mock drafts, all that sort of thing. When you look at every mock draft that year, Keisher and Patrick were 1 and 2, I can guarantee it. Flip-flopped it any which way you want to cut it. And so that plays a part in it too because the fan base knows all about that stuff. And I don't care what anyone says. General managers, scouts, there is some impact on what the media has on picks. Every single one of them will tell you that that's not the case. They're lying. It does have an impact. How much of an impact? Well, we can debate that, no question. But getting back to where Patrick was, there was a bit of history in his final year about his ability to go to the post consistently. And that started back in the Memorial Cup in Red Deer in 2016, and it kind of continued through his next year, his 16-17 season. But if you go back and look at this guy as a 16-year-old into a 17-year-old season, he was absolutely lights out. The other thing you want to say is everyone can go back in a draft and prognosticate perfectly what the draft should look like. Oh, yeah, Cale Makar should have been the first overall guy. Yeah, no kidding. But it's a lot more difficult to do it when you're on the hot seat. What I liked about today's comments from Bobby Clark is that they were completely candid. They were, I can't help but think that they were honest. And you never, ever see that in hockey, especially with guys that go back a long ways in the same organization.
Yeah, it's very rare to see something like that. And Bobby Clark, he'll throw us a wild card, has done it throughout his career a few times, Sammy. But what kind of stood out to me is how he just mentioned Hextall went rogue. Like, yeah. How uncommon is that for a GM to just, as Bobby Clark put it, just ignore what his scouts are telling him and just take the bull by the horns and make the pick he wants to make?
It doesn't happen often. It happens even less frequently that goes public. In the scouting community, you hear about it a little bit, but it's obviously taboo to spread that word publicly. But the last time I remember is when Steve Yzerman took Moritz Seider. And I was pretty confident that there were a lot of scouts at the table that thought that was too high for that to happen. Steve Yzerman definitely put his stamp on that draft, the 2019 or 2020 draft, to my mind's a little bit mush right now, but he definitely put his stamp on the organization coming over from Tampa and claiming his top spot in the Detroit organization. And it wasn't long thereafter that Tyler Wright was let go, that Jeff Finley was let go, that Andrew Dixon was let go, and those three scouts all had to find jobs in other places. So that, for me, was another situation where, I don't know if you want to call it going rogue. I mean, when you look back at it, Steve Eisen was pretty confident in knowing what he was going to get in Moritz Seider, and I think we're seeing that now. I think he's the Calder, you know, the Calder Trophy leader, in my opinion. Everyone will say Raymond, but Zegras, whatever. But having said that, that's the last time I can remember it. But no one really ever went public about, oh, yeah, Steve Yzerman just did this. I think the evidence surrounding it circumstantially will tell you that that's what happened in that draft.
Well, one thing you mentioned, and this is always true, that media does play a part, especially with the draft, because of the draft talk that goes into it and all the narratives that build. And I do agree that that does have an impact on where guys get taken. As far as Cale Makar is concerned, because you look back at it now, it's obvious, you're right, he should have been the first overall to look at the type of talent that he is. But he was coming up through the Alberta Junior Hockey League. And at the time, I think the only player who had been successful recently out of that league was Colton Parayko. And before that, it was Chris Phillips who was a first overall pick. I mean, you got to go back, you know, to very few and far between finding defensemen coming out of that league or close to coming out of that league. And even Parayko, I think, went to college first and then got drafted, whatever the case was. So he had to go through a different route. But if Cale Makar was playing in a different league, let's say playing in college hockey at the time, or he had, let's say, been playing in the OHL, is there any way he doesn't go first overall?
For me, if he's playing major junior, and I can't remember. I want to say Medicine Hat had his right. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think he ends up going first overall. But let me throw this one at you, okay? Let me throw this one at you. Shane Wright this year. How long have we been talking about Shane Wright?
Seems like forever.
3 years since he came into the league as an exceptional player. So if we look at who would follow him in the draft, and my rankings will come out tomorrow, you can take Kemmel, you can take Lambert, Miroshnichenko, Yurov. You can go through those list of guys. If you're sitting there and you're picking first overall, we've heard about Shane Wright for 3 years. And if you're a fan of a team and your team goes there and selects first overall and they don't take Shane Wright, what do you think is going to happen? What kind of backlash would you think would happen?
Yeah.
So this is what I'm talking about. Whether no one in the NHL is going to admit it, but there is influence there, no question.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, you know, because
you
don't want to take the heat when you go off the board that way sometimes. And nobody's ever going to admit it, Sammy, but we're all human to some level, right? So it's going to affect you in different ways. It's going to affect different people in different ways.
And this is it. But, you know, just about everyone in hockey is that type A personality to start with. So no one ever wants to admit wrongdoing or that outside influences are affecting their decisions.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the nature of the beast. But I've had some conversations within the scouting community, and there's no question. If you look at 10 mock drafts when we get to, you know, when we get into their first week in July, I guarantee you 9 of them, if not all 10, will have Shane Wright going number one overall. And if you're Jeff Gorton and you're sitting there, are you going to take Ivan Miroshnichenko, who's Russian? Are you going to take the Finn, Brad Lambert? Are you going to take Joachim Kimmel, another Finn? What would you do? I mean, especially think about that. Think about some of the teams that might be picking in that area. Vancouver was in that situation for a little while. You know.
Sam Cosentino, our guest on Canuck Central. So we've been looking back at that 2017 draft, and Elias Pettersson went 5th overall to the Canucks, of course. There was, as Sat mentioned, some debate between him and Cody Glass, but, you know, they made the pick on Elias Pettersson. And the first few years went brilliantly, Sammy, but this year we're kind of wondering what's happened to the real Elias Pettersson. What do you see when you've seen the Canucks in recent games, or what have you seen out of Elias Pettersson this year?
A guy that's not playing with the same confidence, and confidence is a really hard thing to judge based on sitting there and watching and not knowing the personality of the player. Having said that, when you see players who in their first couple of years were instinctive on everything they did, where to go on the ice, when to shoot the puck, when to pass it, when to shoot blocker side as opposed to high glove side, all of these different things, you're at your best when you're doing them naturally and you don't have to think about them, when there's no hesitation in your game, when your decision is made before you even get the puck. in the case of Pettersson this year, what I see is a guy who gets the puck, pauses, assesses, and then makes the play. Not a guy who was ahead of the play. So he's either at the pace of play or behind the pace of play slightly, as opposed to a guy that we're so used to seeing being ahead of it all the time. Mm-hmm. Another thing, and this is not speculation, this is not anything I know of, what we can say about the pandemic, and we will probably hear more about this if it ever comes to an end, it affects different people in different ways. And I'm not saying at all that Pettersson has been affected by it. I can't say that. But what I can say, it has had an impact on people. Think about the age of some of these players. You think about Pettersson coming out at the start of the year. Well, I'm not going to do social media anymore. I think it was taken away from my game, making those kind of quotes and statements. How do we know, sitting here, watching this guy, that this hasn't had some impact on him? Whether it's through his family or through his friends or through, at times, having to be stuck in a hotel room by himself as a young guy who should be out enjoying restaurants and the odd, you know, green light night and that sort of thing. It just hasn't happened here in the last, basically, three hockey season calendars. And so I'm not going to sit here and speculate that that's been had anything to do with Pettersson, but I think that's something we should always keep in the back of our mind when assessing any players in the National Hockey League today.
And as far as projecting forward too, how many times have we seen high-end players go through some ups and downs when they show early on they're going to be elite-level guys, and then all of a sudden they take a bit of a step back? Because right now, this has been very jarring for a lot of fans here, Sam, and some are wondering if he's ever going to get back to it again. How rare is this, or how common can this type of thing be for players like this at this age?
Well, and I get that, Sat, because when you come over, first of all, you're the surprise number five pick, so it's a little bit of pressure taken off you. Oh, my gosh, this guy, I can't believe it. It was great foresight by Judd Brackett at the time, Benning, whoever else was making the selection. And then it sets in, and you go in, you have a couple of years, and there is a tendency sometimes with human nature to say, you know what, I'm pretty good. Like, I'm good at this. And maybe you say to yourself, I don't need to work as hard because I know my talent will carry me, and you know what, I don't have to take the extra initiative here. And again, I don't want to speculate that this has happened with Pettersson. What I am saying, though, it has happened to players in the past where you go, you have early success, you just kind of rest on your laurels a little bit. And what makes our elite players, we talk about production over a long period of time. So you talk about McDavid. Well, you ever watch McDavid work out in the off season? It's a joke. You talk about Sidney Crosby. Did that guy ever take a day off in the offseason? Nathan MacKinnon? No, Crosby has dragged him into the fight in the offseason. What makes elite players elite is the fact that they are elite almost all the time for long periods of time. And so I think Pettersson has the elite talent. I think he's going to get back to an elite level. But I also think that there are times where some young players come into the league, have a little success early on, and then take their foot off the gas a little bit. Great learning experience. There's no doubt this guy has the talent to do so. I'd love to see him get back to being that guy, and I think the potential is there for him to do that.
Sam Constantino is our guest, and you mentioned, Sam, your ranking is going to be up on sportsnet.ca tomorrow, which is Wednesday. So for those listening on the podcast, make sure to go check it out right away as soon as we finish up this convo with Sam. And looking ahead to the draft, you mentioned some of the guys that are available. How would you judge the higher end of this draft? Like, how strong do you think this first round is this year?
It's good. I like the 05s better, the 2023 draft. I think there's a boatload of high-end players. I don't think this draft features as much. I'd say it's forward-heavy. I'd say a lot of those forwards are on the smaller side, six-foot or sub-six-foot guys. So that's going to create some discussion amongst the scouts and general managers inside the war room. I would classify it as good, not great.
It's where would you say is the depth of this draft, Sammy? Like, what's in the high end? What's in the top 10? What are we finding there in the top 10?
Yeah, you find some really interesting guys. So Yurov and Miroshenko are two guys that are kind of more new age Russian style players, a little bit in the mold of a Podkolzin, where they have more depth to their all around game, yet they have the skill to be able to play with high end players. Miroshenko might be the best pure goal scorer in the draft where Yurov might be a little bit more well-rounded in terms of the 200-foot game. You're looking at Kemmel, who, when you go back and you use Liga point production as a predictor for NHL success, it's pretty good. Rantanen, Barkov, starting to see it with Kotkaniemi if you really break down the numbers. Patrick Laine, same sort of thing. You can see that point production in Liga is typically a good predictor of pretty good success in the National Hockey League. So Kemmel at the start of the year was lighting it up. Before he got hurt, he was leading Liga, which is unheard of for a draft-eligible player. He's, you know, battled a shoulder issue. I think that same sort of thing was bothering him at the World Juniors. But you're talking about an elite talent with excellent work ethic. Brad Lambert is a real interesting guy. He's up and down and all over the place. But, man, when he gets it going, his skating and vision are unbelievable and maybe unparalleled in this draft. So you're getting a lot of different elements from forwards who are that 6 foot or sub 6 foot size. And I like the depth in the top 10.
Sammy, we love it all the time. Thanks for your time today. And we'll do this over.
Love it. Reach that. Take care, guys. Thanks.
There he is. The great Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet analyst and prospect analyst. Fascinating conversation with Sammy revisiting the 2017 draft. Canuck Central, you get us on podcast. Always subscribe, leave a review. We do appreciate it. Live on Sportsnet 650, Canuck Central pregame begins next on Sportsnet 650.